Thank you for joining us today for the Oakwood Baptist Church podcast. This episode was recorded at the Home Builder Sunday School class, which Pastor Jones teaches at Oakwood. The lessons are taken from the book Real Worship by Warren Wiersbe.
2 Timothy chapter 2, and we're going to read a verse, 2 Timothy 2 and verse 2. It says, "In the things that thou hast heard of me among many witnesses, the same commit thou to faithful men who shall be able to teach others also." I want to build on that. I want to talk to you about worship and tradition, and we'll close with this. Warren Wiersbe, which I tell you, I've benefited from Warren Wiersbe very much. You know, just about every sermon that I preach, I'm sure I've read a Warren Wiersbe commentary on it. Any book that I've read by Warren Wiersbe, I have just found great benefit from. But he said this, "In some churches, the kind of worship being practiced is like a bouquet of cut flowers. It is attractive, but not enduring. Why? Because like the bouquet, this kind of worship has no roots. And without roots, it will eventually die." I think that that's a pretty great description of a lot of what is called worship today. You say, what do you mean? I am not doubting the sincerity of somebody that does it differently than me. I'm not doubting that. I think we need to be very careful about that. But I do question the wisdom of a lot of what is called worship today. I am questioning that. Because I think a lot of what modern day worship is kind of cuts off the past. And I think that that's a mistake. I'm asking the question this morning, and you already know my answer. Is it wise to cut ourselves off from the past? I personally think that a lot of what we would call contemporary worship, and I really don't like that word. It's just kind of the word that's stuck. I don't like that word because it makes it sound like you're against anything new. I'm not. I mean, like, come on. I mean, there's a lot of new technologies and new advancements and new styles that are great, you know. But the thing I'm saying is contemporary to me, I think a lot of what is driving that is really a worldliness. And let me explain. I think that sometimes a lot of pastors in general are driven to be cool. Now, I'm not saying that I personally want to be perceived as a dork. I mean, I'd rather not be like that, you know. I mean, I want to be accepted and appreciated and respected like any other human being that's kind of normal does. But I don't want to be driven by being cool. That I think is a great mistake. Because what happens is that this desire to be cool a lot of times isolates our ministries from history. And what that does is it creates an imbalance in ministry and produces imbalanced worshipers. So what I'm saying is a generation of believers has grown that has little or no understanding of their Christian heritage. I think this is so true, what I'm going to try and describe. There are a lot of people living as if God never did anything great until their church came along and figured it out. It's so true. That's why, honestly, I don't like the whole language of gospel-centeredness. To me, it's kind of like you keep saying this, but what do you mean? I just read a book. It was a good book. I hesitate to even tell the title because I like the author. But there was a lot of talk of this gospel center, and to me it was gobbledygook. Like you remember Mushmouth on Fat Albert? It's like what are you talking about? I mean, I was just kind of like, you keep saying gospel-centered everything. Gospel-centered donuts, gospel-centered dating, gospel-centered, like, what do you mean? And I think what you mean is being biblical, is what you're trying to say. And it's kind of like, the idea that I get from some of these authors and preachers is that in the last 10 years, you all of a sudden discovered the gospel. The gospel's been around for a long, long time. And listen, there have been people preaching the gospel for a long, long time. They didn't just start preaching it when you started your church in downtown Chicago. Right, right? I mean, like that kind of bothers me a little bit. I take umbrage with it. There's a guy, I mean, I'm an independent Baptist. We're an independent Baptist church. I'm not ashamed of that. I don't hate other groups or anything like that. You say, what is independent? Just what it means. We are autonomous. We kind of run our own show here. We're not connected to anybody. We fellowship with some people, but we're Oakwood Baptist Church. But there was a guy several years ago, I mean, probably 10, 12 years ago, wrote an article called The New Independent Baptists. And said, as new independent Baptists, what we do is we preach expository messages. And I'm thinking, I was preaching like that before you ever became a pastor and wrote this article. And there were guys before me that were doing this. And new independent Baptists are personal evangelists. What? It's as if they all of a sudden discovered this stuff. And that kind of rubs me the wrong way. A modern strategist said this. This is a real quote from a real book. If your congregation sings from the hymnal while being accompanied by an organ and a piano, and if you have a choir that wears robes, your church is dying. Well, that's not fair. And that's not true. Now, we don't wear robes here, but we do have an organ. And don't tell anybody, but if you did a poll, the organ is at the top of the most hated church instrument of all time, I think, you know. I kind of like the organ, honestly. I don't really enjoy organ solos too much. I'll be honest with you on that. But it does feel really good when a choir's singing and the piano's playing. There's some good filler to it. And our church plays by a piano and sings out of a hymnal and plays an organ. And I don't think anybody would say that our church is dying. Now we don't wear choir robes. I mean, well, I'm kind of tempted to for one Sunday wear them and just say we're not dying. And I don't know. I mean, that's just not fair. You know, that's silly talk. And basically, what I interpret as, and maybe I'm wrong, but it's like we're cooler than that. We don't do that. We're cooler than that. That's not cool, right? So worship, here's what I'm trying to tell you. Worship must involve both the heritage of the past and the opportunities of the present. See, because either way you cut that, if you don't have those two things, your church really doesn't have much of a future. For example, let's start on the flip side. If we're not taking advantage of the opportunities of the present, we got no future. And let's be honest, there are some churches that's exactly what they're doing. Oh yeah, they're what this guy's describing. They're playing their old stodgy organ and in their stodgy choir robes and whatnot, and they are not taking advantage of any of the opportunities of the present, and they don't have much of a future. They don't. But I do think that there's something to these groups that have really just ignored the heritage of the past and have latched onto anything novel and new, latched onto anything that's technological and anything that's cool and trendy, and they're cutting off their root system, and I don't think they have much of a future either. I mean, they'll be around for a little while, but it'll fizzle and die because it has no roots. It's like that bouquet of flowers. So we need to start, first of all, by rescuing the word tradition from unnecessary ridicule and reproach. I've said this recently in a sermon, but I want to say it again. The word tradition gets a bad rap because of everybody's love of the novelty. Tradition is not a bad word. I want everybody in this room to understand that. Tradition is a fine word. Like, we all have traditions. If I went around the room and talked about Christmas traditions, some of you have certain things you make on certain days at certain times, and you love it. And it's good. And I mean, listen, 4th of July is coming up. We got traditions around here. We do. As a church, I'm talking about, let's not just talk about as a nation, as a church. What do we do traditionally the 4th of July? Now, this can change, but traditionally, what do? Well, we all get together. That's a good thing. We eat hamburgers and hot dogs. I mean, what's more American than eating hamburgers and hot dogs on a national holiday, okay? That's what we do. We have the tradition of playing Ultimate Frisbee. I don't know why that started. I think Ezra Green brought that to the table. And it just worked out and it stuck. And that's what we do. We play that. And some of you don't, but a lot of us do. It's kind of our thing. All right. And then we let the sun go down and we shoot fireworks off. I mean, again, I can't think of much more American tradition better than blowing stuff up in the air, you know? And it's a great time. That's our tradition. And I don't think anybody would say, well, that stinks. No. Tradition is good. It gives us an anchor. It gives us moorings, right? But there's a lot of times people also, I think, have attacked tradition because of certain passages in the Bible. And I'm going to read one to you. Matthew 15, if I can read it quickly. Then came to Jesus, scribes and Pharisees, which were of Jerusalem, saying, why do thy disciples transgress the tradition of the elders? For they wash not their hands when they eat bread. So they're upset because Jesus wasn't keeping their man-made tradition. It'd be like somebody coming in and saying, you know, you guys, you stopped your fireworks show. You're a liberal church. What? It's just a tradition, right? That's kind of what's going on here. But he answered and said to them, why do you also transgress the commandment of God by your tradition? For God commanded, saying, honor thy father and mother, and he that curses father and mother, let him die the death. But ye say, whosoever shall say to his father or mother, it is a gift, by whatsoever thou mightest be profited by. They're making loopholes and getting around God's commands is what he's doing. He says, ye hypocrites, well did Esaias prophesy of you, saying, this people draweth nigh with their mouth and honoreth me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. But in vain they do worship me, teaching for doctrines the commandments of men. And so Jesus was attacking their tradition, wasn't he? But he wasn't necessarily attacking tradition for tradition's sake. He was saying, you have elevated tradition to the doctrines of God. You have elevated tradition to being equal to the commands of God or even a master to the commands of God. That's what he was attacking. But a lot of people have latched on the fact that Jesus was a little bit of a maverick in his day. And they get this idea that Jesus was against all tradition. And he wasn't. He kept Passover feasts. He kept Jewish traditions. He's the one that said, I came not to destroy the law, but to fulfill the law. So Jesus was not against these things. But because of passages like this, it seems as if some people have put all tradition on the naughty list. That's not fair. And that's not what the Bible is teaching. And by the way, I think I mentioned this to you recently. I think religion is another one of those words that's been put on the naughty list. You know, it's not about religion, it's about relationship. Well, yeah, I agree with that in the sense that you have to have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. I understand that. And it's not a denomination that saves anybody. It's Jesus that saves people. So it's a Baptist or non-denominational or whatever. It's Christ that saves. But religion just means beliefs. And you study your Bible and show and pay careful attention, and you will see how important doctrine is. Well, what's doctrine? Yeah, it's religion. Everybody okay? That's what we're saying. Now let me read a verse to you. 2 Thessalonians 2:14-15, whereunto he called you by our gospel to the obtaining of the glory by our Lord Jesus Christ. Therefore, brethren, stand fast and hold the traditions which ye have been taught, whether by word or by our epistle. So you see there, the Bible is telling us actually to hold to tradition. Tradition comes from two Latin words that together means to give over, to pass on. And that comes to the verse that we read at the very beginning. And the things that thou hast heard among me, among many witnesses, the same commit thou to faithful men who are able to teach others also. That's important. So Paul is saying, Timothy, I committed this to you. I committed to you the doctrines, the religion of the Christian faith. A lot of the traditions, like the Lord's Supper, things like that, I've committed all of that to you. You've committed that to leaders of the Ephesian church. And you need to make sure that you find faithful men in that church that are going to be committed to teaching it to them when you're gone and when they're gone. That's what we need. So, here's how it works. And I've got about 8 minutes here. It works like this. The older generation identifies the things they believe are important and then pass them along to the next generation for safekeeping and for their enjoyment. I think I've told you this. When I became a pastor, I was 27. I've grown up in church all my life. So I literally sat down with a legal pad and thought, okay, I've grown up in church all my life. What are the things about church that annoy me? Drive me crazy. And I started writing things down. I said, well, I'm the pastor now. I'm not doing that. And I started changing those things. What was I doing? I was evaluating some of the traditions that I didn't see as having much value. And I changed it. But there were certain things that, man, this is non-negotiable. We've got to pass this on. But one thing that I've always tried to do is appreciate the heritage of the past. Because I know this. This is what's going to happen. It's going to happen in your home. It's going to happen in my home. I did this with my family. I grew up and I said, okay, what are some of the things that in my childhood were great that I want to keep, that I want to do? Like, for example, on Christmas Day, I want to have chocolate pie. I want to have chocolate pie on Christmas Day. Why? Because my grandma, on my mom's side, always made chocolate pie on Christmas Day. Now, I don't like meringue. I don't like meringue. And my grandma didn't make meringue on top of a chocolate pie. She put whipped topping on chocolate. And I like chocolate sprinkles on top of chocolate pie. You got to have sprinkles. You have to have sprinkles. It's communism not to have sprinkles. All right? And so every day I want that on Christmas Day. Now my wife is like, why do you like this so much? I love this. This is tradition. Now there are other traditions that's like, nah, we don't need this. We can be done with that. Now here's what's going to happen. I know out of five kids, there's probably going to be one of them be like, chocolate pie on Christmas Day. Where's the chocolate pie? There's probably going to be some of them like, whatever. We don't need that. We need pecan pie or whatever. And some of you are saying, it's not pecan, it's pecan. You know, like, see what I'm talking about. Every generation is going to evaluate these things, and they're going to see, hey, what needs to be kept safe and passed on? What needs to be evaluated? Each new generation does that. They reject what they know and pass on. This includes things like objects. Okay? I'll give you an example right here at Oakwood. Right here at Oakwood. You can go by the nurseries. There's the very first communion set in 1908 or whatever, 1906, from Oakwood Baptist Church is out there, if you've seen that. All right? Now, we don't use it because we're not all drinking out of the same chalice, all right? We're not doing that. That's a tradition that we're like, I don't think we need to do that, right? But there's objects. There are values. Hey, listen, this is important to us. This value has to go on from generation to generation. Theories, organizations, philosophies, social processes, certain practices. Very quick, I've got like 6 minutes. A little class participation. Can anyone, out of that list I just gave you, objects, values, theories, organizations, philosophies, social processes, practices, can anybody think of some examples that you would say, hey, look, I've got kids coming up. I've got grandkids that are going to be here before too long. These are some things I think we need to make sure we continue to pass down. Can anybody think of some? Mary? Family. She said family devotion. So those are things within your home. Let's think of some things also, not in just in the home, but in the ministry as well. But Mary, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I know you grew up in a pastor's home, so you probably experienced family devotions. But I would imagine, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth and put you on the spot, but I would imagine you've probably taken what your parents did in family devotions. You've probably tweaked and changed it and done it a different way with your own children. But you've also said, listen, this was very important to me, and I want to make sure that we continue this. She's kind of nodding her head in agreement on that. What's something else? Maybe church-wide or family-wide? Okay, Vacation Bible School. Now, has it changed over years? Absolutely has. When I was a kid, it was during the day. Yeah, no. It was during the day. How many remember Vacation Bible? I mean, that's why it was called that. But hasn't that changed traditionally? Somebody tell me. It's not any secret. Why don't we do it during the day anymore? Yeah, too many more women are working. Now, again, I'm not weighing in on that. I'm not being ugly about that. It's just, if we did it during the day, we would not have the army of help that we need. So now it's all kind of morphed to the evening. So, but it's not changed. When I was a kid, how many remember marching in with the Christian flag? Onward, Christian soldiers, you know, and all that kind of stuff. Look, we don't do that here, but we haven't changed the fact that we have an evangelistic crusade, and we're trying to keep that. Now, again, so I've done it the same way, same format, same theme for many, many years. Why? Not because I feel like it's stale. I think it keeps working. It keeps being effective. But you know, if I stop pastoring tomorrow and I turn the reins over to somebody else, maybe I kind of mentored them and kind of worked through that process and I'm stepping aside and they're going to be the new pastor, it probably would bother me if they said, nah, we're not doing Vacation Bible School anymore. See, I didn't even call it Vacation Bible School. I called it Kids Crusade, and I did that on purpose because everybody else says VBS. I didn't want them to think I got crusty Kraft Kool-Aid and coloring or whatever they typically do. Ours is different, and so I called it different. So see what I'm saying? It's like that's the idea. But it would bother me if the new pastor said, "No, we're casting that aside." Why? I think that there's value in that event, right? All right, that's a good one. We'll move on because that gobbled up some time. But thank you for those thoughts. To be fair, traditions have changed over the centuries. Christians in the first 3 centuries, did you know this, prohibited the playing of flutes in their worship services because flute music was associated with pagan cults. Well, come on now. Nobody would make that association today. Nobody would. All right, so those things can change. So again, the problem isn't tradition. Tradition is simply by the content of what one generation hands to another. The problem is traditionalism. That's the worship of traditions. And that's what Jesus was attacking. Somebody said this, tradition is the living faith of the dead. Traditionalism is the dead faith of the living. That's a good quote. That's a good quote. I wish I came up with that. Too many think that traditional is synonym for dead or obsolete, but they are wrong. So I'm going to throw this out. I've got like 2 minutes. 2 minutes. And I want you to keep your wheels spinning here. Some traditions that have to be passed to the next generation. The same, commit thou to the other men. I put this, the gospel. Okay, again, I kind of attacked this idea that somebody just discovered the gospel. Nobody just discovered the gospel. It was handed down to men, and it's been being passed for generations. But we've got to make sure, like I said in the public, recognizing the graduates, these guys got to know what the gospel is, and they got to know that they're saved. And we've got to constantly be preaching and teaching the gospel over and over and over and over and over again, because we've got to pass that down. All right? It's the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. It's Christ alone for salvation. Personal faith in Him. No works. All grace. I think that we need to put down, I think here's something that's important to me, passing down the next generation, that's the Bible. Our kids got to know the Bible is inerrant, infallible, inspired, preserved. I think that they have to know, and I know this is a hot button topic, and I'm probably stepping on a landmine here. Even the translation issue, those things have to be talked about. People need to know what they believe and why they believe it and think through these processes. These are issues that need to be addressed. How about conservative, non-worldly Christianity? However you go about that, I'm very passionate about that. I'm going to say that again, conservative, non-worldly Christianity. Now again, I think that that might look a little different from decade to decade, but conservative, non-worldly Christianity. You can pray what you want, but there's something I pray for my kids all the time, and I pray this, that I want my kids to stay in church. And I'm not just saying, oh, I just want them to be in church. I pray specifically. I want them to be in conservative Baptist churches as adults. I pray that very regularly. And I'm trusting God to answer my prayer on that. That's important to me. I also think of being evangelistic. That to me is something that has to be passed down. Whether that's door-to-door knocking on doors or inviting people over for dinner and talking about the gospel. This idea of me going to you to share the gospel with you, that's something that we cannot get away from. Why? That's first century Christianity. It's been passed down from generation to generation. All right? So what I wanted to do is ask a few more ideas of things that you think, man, we got to pass this down. We got to pass this down. But we're out of time. So some of you are like, whoo, shoo, good. All right, well, I appreciate it. Thank you for being in Sunday school today. Don't forget, we're starting a new marriage series, so if this one made you squirm a little bit because we talked about controversial subjects, we're just going to talk about marriage. Can't be anything controversial about that.